Hello and welcome to the first episode of the In the Picture podcast. I'm Bill Borowski, one of your hosts.
I'm Drew Erler, your other host.
And I'm James Peel, the third host.
Even though we shouldn't really call ourselves hosts, that makes us sound professional. But welcome to the first episode. I'm really excited.
I am too.
Quite excited.
This is fun.
Do one of you, who wants to explain what we're going to do here?
I'll do that. Because
I think Drew should. Drew was the one who really kind of brought the idea to us.
Okay, all right. So what this show is going to be is the three of us, we all love movies, all three of us, but we have very different ways we approach movies. So Billy, tell us a little bit about what your, you know, why you love movies. What about a movie is good to you?
Yeah.
What makes a good movie?
That's a complicated question, but from my background is that ever since I was three, I've pretty much from the start of my life, pretty much I've been known as like the movie guy. So, and I've just loved filmmaking. I've done short films before and all that kind of stuff, which you could check out, A Filmmaker's Journey on YouTube. Just a little plug there. But so I really look at it from filmmaking as a craft and an art form, and I really pay attention to like what the director really wanted to come across. And I really just I really love it for the enjoyment factor, but it's also just the filmmaking and the artistry that is the filmmaking process.
Okay, so yours is like the kind of the technical aspect.
Technical and enjoyment aspect. I'm not like in the whole like what does it really mean and all that kind of stuff. It's more like what did the director do? What did this movie do well? Did it do what it set out to do? If you know what I'm trying to get at.
All right, and the reason, Billy, why you mentioned the lofty what does it mean?
There's a reason for that.
Because I like everything Billy just said. Imagine the opposite, and then that's me. Billy and I had a previous podcast before this one, and that's part of the inspiration for this podcast because we had very long tangents, arguments about movies when
Monkey
we were supposed
temples,
to be reviewing them.
You know.
Yeah, stuff like that. And so I'm more interested in the artistry of it. Did the director set out? I have a basic technical level that should be met in order for a movie to be watchable. You know what I mean? But I don't look so much for entertainment as I do something is conveyed. You know, the director has a vision, and the vision is something new, something you haven't seen before. Mm-hmm. I look a lot for creativity. I love seeing creativity in movies. And so I'm also a sucker for metaphors and symbolism, as long as it's done well, tastefully. And James, so what's your tastes?
All right. Well, first I wanna give a shout out to that theme song that was written by Kevin Peel, my brother. He is a member of Bike Cops, a Chicago-based band, and you can check more of them out at bikecopsmusic.bandcamp.com.
Gotta love that plug.
Yeah.
Gotta love that plug.
Great plug.
Gotta love it.
Just stroking yourself under the table.
my personal favorite plug.
Oh, my God.
But, yeah, so what I look for in movies is just, like, it's got to be, I mean, I just want it to be entertaining, and usually I have to agree with the message of the movie, and that's about it. It's got to be entertaining, and I like the message.
Okay, so you understand where we're coming from then.
Each week,
one of us is going to choose a movie. It's going to be either a movie that we love, that we've seen before, or one that we haven't seen yet that we really want to see.
Yeah.
And
it's
all three of us have to watch it.
Yeah.
And we come back and we talk about it, and the opinions will be often very different, often very offensive to the other people involved, often resulting in
words will be said.
Hearts will be broken.
Hearts will be
tears
broken.
Tears will be shed.
Blood will be spilt.
Minds will be lost.
But usually it's going to be, I mean, it's each week one of us is going to pick a movie. So this week I picked a movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it's whatever it may be, usually we try to think of something we all love, but who knows? Eventually we'll do something we like just genuinely despise. And it's pretty much what's something we want to bring to the group that we want to talk about.
And when you say something we all love, you mean like something the person that picked
the person
it
that
loves.
Picks it loves. So I picked this week is the first episode, and
wait, before you get into that,
okay,
I just want to polish up my standards a bit because I kind of made it sound like I'm like a mindless drone that watches like any Tom Cruise movie.
Hey.
Or any action movie, like
Don't hate on the Cruise,
man.
I don't think I've ever seen a Tom Cruise. Oh no, I have. I saw that one where it was like,
well, that's gonna change with
this podcast. I saw the like Groundhog Day knockoff one that he was in.
Edge of Tomorrow. That was incredible.
It was.
You mean Live, Die, to Repeat.
It has like 18 different titles, and I choose Edge of Tomorrow because that's what it came out of theaters as.
It was good. I liked it, actually.
I freaking love that.
Yeah, I called it a knockoff just because similar premise. But I'm actually not a huge action movie guy, but I do appreciate a good one here and there. But mainly I like thrillers and dramas. So, didn't want to sound like a erudite just now. Is that a correct use of that word, Drew?
No.
Okay, well, I didn't want to sound like a fucking idiot. That's what I meant to say.
I like using big words. Make me seem smart.
All right, erudite humor. Yeah, I completely misused that word.
Yeah. Okay. Erudite refers to my very refined, intelligent, witty sort of colloquialisms, kind of, you
stop.
Know, witticisms.
Love
I like
God.
To call
stop.
Them. I
no.
like to call them
no.
drulogies.
No.
Drew got an
more
end
like
of the
Drew
year
Sefer.
High school award that said erudite humor, and he's let it go into his head ever since.
Like nothing has ever gone to his
I can't
head
help
before.
That someone spoke the truth and finally
stop.
Saw my genius.
No, yeah, all genius. Right, that's a word.
Okay, go ahead and introduce. What movie did you choose?
Yeah,
for this
so
week that
I
we
chose.
All
I chose one of my favorite movies of all time. It's if I had to. I don't like ranking my favorite movies, but if I did have to rank it, it would definitely be really, 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 really up there. It's one of the movies I could just rewatch over and over again. I could probably watch this like once a day if I really had to, and that's Goodfellas. My favorite Martin Scorsese movie. This is, in my opinion, like this is biased, but I know there are flaws with it, but when it comes for the enjoyment and the filmmaking and the style and just the acting and everything involved in it, Martin Scorsese, that is his best movie. That is my personal favorite movie of Scorsese. Yes, he's made better films filmmaking wise, but as my personal opinion, Goodfellas is just the one to beat. I absolutely adore this movie. Also, just a fair warning, all these episodes will be, all the movies we talk about on this podcast, they're going to be spoiler-filled reviews, so I suggest you go, if you haven't seen Goodfellas, first, it's a American classic, go see it, do yourself a favor, watch it, and come back and listen to this incredible podcast that we're presenting to you guys.
I like that you called it incredible.
Incredible.
That gives us high hopes. All right. I'm going to start off by saying a lot of the things you said in your little intro to the movie there, I disagree with.
Wrong.
Go ahead and elaborate.
I'm not going to elaborate quite yet. We'll get into the nitty-gritty later, but I just want to say right now that right out of the gate, I disagreed with you.
Shocker.
I didn't think it was a bad movie, but I thought it was... I mean, I definitely didn't think it was like in my top movies that I've ever mm-hmm. seen. I don't know. It just kind of mainly for me, it made me realize that Martin Scorsese copied himself with Wolf of Wall Street. I think Wolf of Wall Street was a bit of a knockoff of Goodfellas.
No.
Okay.
It took influence from. No. It's
okay. I just don't think like. He explored a similar theme in two different movies. That's not copying yourself.
Yeah.
That just shows that there's a theme that you're interested in, and you want to look at it from different angles, from different people. Yeah. These are both real life stories.
Well this is
I
mainly
know.
Showing like the.
I mean, all right, but here's like I know they're both real people, but I like seeing more like diversity in an actor or a director, like the director
Hugo.
That's how you say it. Yeah, well, I'm not
Hugo. Last Temptation of Christ.
Silence.
List every Scorsese movie now.
I'm just saying that he's done different
you're
stuff.
You're literally saying show me some diversity, and we're listing you the diversity that he's done.
I'm not saying he only does the same thing like over and over. I'm just saying like I don't think he should have done the same thing twice. And that's kind of what he did.
You really wouldn't like Casino then.
Probably hey, my not. Dad, I was talking to my dad about Goodfellas this morning, and he said that he likes Casino better than he does Goodfellas.
Oh, I don't really even like Casino. Oh, well, I mean, I gotta watch it again, but from what I remember, I didn't like it.
I liked Wolf of Wall Street better than Goodfellas.
I mean, Wolf of Wall Street's also one of my favorite movies. Scorsese is just one of my favorite directors. It's just Goodfellas, like, I don't know, I saw it when I was like in 8th grade or something, and then I usually watch it a couple times every year because there are like a select few movies that I watch like every couple months, and this is one of those. I don't know, it just struck a chord with me. Wolf of Wall Street is also like 3 hours long, so it's like kind of an investment.
You watch it every couple of months?
Yes.
How many times have you seen this movie?
I have no idea.
Oh my god.
I've maybe seen it at least two or three times this year alone.
Oh my god. Okay. Well, James, I was going to mention in response to your argument that you don't think the director should have done the same movie twice. Think of it as like a painter who, Monet, for example, painted haystacks over and over again because he...
And he sucked.
Monet...
Yeah.
The father of Impressionism, he sucked.
I mean, if that's what he did, I can't really picture Monet right now, but if he painted haystacks, then fuck him.
He also did water lilies. So what, the subject is a problem to you?
Yeah.
Okay, anyway.
It's boring as hell.
No, they're interesting. They're good paintings.
I would not go to an art museum filled with haystacks.
I just want to go to an art museum. Those the places are boring.
No, I would go to an art museum. I actually love art museums, but not haystacks.
Yeah, have you been in the Art Institute?
Yeah, I have. It bored the shit out of me.
For me, like...
You just have to get to the right spot.
For me, like, haystacks are, like number 3,000, and, like, art museums are, like, number 15 for me in life.
What?
Like, if I had to rank things in my life... art museum would be 15, what? And haystack would be 3,000.
Out of all the things in the world, 3,000 is pretty high for haystacks.
And 15 in the world, and an art museum is 15 in the world?
Yes.
Okay,
you can't think of 15 things more important to you than an art museum.
Wait, what?
Do you have like 15 family members?
Okay, well, all right, no.
An art museum
no,
ranks higher than some of those family members.
Family counts as its own thing.
Okay. All right, so things, like objects. Yeah.
We're not going to go ranking things in the world that... No, no. We're all right,
James, give us your top five things, okay? Well,
number one. Okay,
what I'm saying is that an artist has every right to paint the same thing over and over again because, in theory, it should be for them more than for the audience. And that a lot of times gets lost to me in film because it's so connected with the audience, so connected with let's turn a profit, let's entertain. And like, so it's not a problem that he makes this movie, two movies with similar themes.
Well, it's not for him. It's for the audience. I can completely disagree with the base of your argument.
What the whole point of a director is go like, oh, I'm going to make this movie because my, like, I mean, yeah, sometimes they do. They make a movie so their kids because their kids want them to make something. But the point, like, Scorsese can do whatever he wants. He's not going to do something because audiences want to see him do a movie. Like, I want to see him do
exactly.
That Joker movie that he's producing. He's not going to direct it because he doesn't want to direct it. He's going to do whatever the hell he wants because he's Martin Scorsese.
Yeah, but he
because if
it
you
is,
do what
the purpose of movies is to entertain. It's not.
Yeah, but the director.
It's not so the
that's
director can like pat himself on the back.
Sometimes yes, but like.
There's a difference between making the art for yourself and it being self-indulgent and pleased with itself.
Yeah.
We were talking about Mother earlier. Mother is intensely pleased with itself.
Yeah, Darren Aronofsky.
That's Darren Aronofsky seeing how
it's pretty much
far into his head he can go.
It's
like,
pretty,
look
yeah.
how deep
it's pretty much an Aronofsky circle jerk is what that movie is, while Scorsese is him literally telling a story that he wants to tell.
Yeah,
well, the summer blockbusters are like, oh, I wanted to tell a good story but entertain the audience.
Okay.
But like, Goodfellas, he's telling the story because he wants to tell a story and he wants to do what he wants to do.
I don't have a problem with the way he told Goodfellas, but now I have a problem with the way he told Wolf of Wall Street. That's what I'm saying. I wish he told it a new way.
How would you... The issue I'm having here is the major theme of the movie being similar to Goodfellas and it being based on a true story, I don't know how he can tell the story in a different way and avoid that theme and still maintain the integrity of the true story. Like, because the whole book is similar to the book that Goodfellas is off of, mm-hmm. based off of, in that it's the confession of a former criminal.
Yeah. Plus, it's Scorsese's style with the voiceover and the music and all that kind
maybe
of stuff.
Maybe
that's just his style in general. So you're just complaining.
It's not his style. If he's done it, just because he's done it with three movies.
With mob movies? I mean, Scorsese
really defined his style.
Like,
with
when you think
movies.
Of a Scorsese movie, you think of, like, The Wolf of Wall Street and Goodfellas. And what do you think of those movies? You think of the voiceover. You think of the music. You think of just the way the camera moves, which is similar. And that's
you
the
think
Scorsese
of rape
style.
And murder? And the fact that
drugs?
It's just a shout away.
I think it got, yeah, the narration.
You
gotta
have those stones in
the
there.
The guy has to cheat on his wife multiple times in it.
Yeah.
I mean, those are themes that he explores all in, like, all his movies. Just the treatment of women.
Maybe he's got to spread his wings a bit, then.
He has spread his wings. He did The Last Temptation of Christ.
He literally
Silence.
Did a movie
Which,
about
by the
Jesus.
Way, I've never heard of Last Temptation of Christ, for the record. Like, this is the first time I've ever heard of it.
Well,
Will
you should
watch
it. Because that's Scorsese.
Every time you mention it, I think of Passion of the Christ.
It's,
which
that's
I have also
it
never
no,
seen.
It is. It is. You know who plays Jesus in that movie?
Mel
Willem
Gibson?
Dafoe.
Oh.
In Last Temptation of Christ.
That's
Willem
the reason
Dafoe's
to watch
Jesus.
It. He was in the hit film Antichrist.
Yes. And he was also the Green Goblin in Spider-Man.
That's funny that he was in Antichrist and Last Temptation.
Yeah, he gets his dick broken in Antichrist.
Yeah.
Have you seen Antichrist?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh God, you're gonna make me watch this.
I am not gonna make you watch it. It would make you too uncomfortable.
Thank God.
As far as we know, they actually had sex in the movie because the.
I can't imagine any other situation in which it
didn't. So that's like a
gifts are just way too gross.
It's so realistic.
So it's kind of like Nymphomaniac.
Kind of, except it's not their heads superimposed onto different bodies.
Wait, well, that's what happened?
Yeah, they didn't actually have sex. It was like porn stars having sex or something. Yeah.
So they had like Shia LaBeouf photoshopped onto
even
like...
Even though Shia LaBeouf claims that he had sex for the movie,
yeah,
but
Shia
LaBeouf's
that's
a
I think that's
crazy
because Shia
fuck,
LaBeouf's like
so.
A virgin, and he's...
he's just batshit insane, so...
Cut Shia LaBeouf some slack, because he didn't get crazy until he got raped.
Wait, what?
He got raped by like a crazy fan. Like, her boyfriend, like, locked him in a hotel room and while she raped him, and the boyfriend, I guess, was okay with it because he was also crazy.
But, moving on.
Yeah, he didn't get nuts until
let's
after
go
that.
Back to Goodfellas,
I
want
to change this podcast to a podcast about Shia LaBeouf in honor of his
real
loss,
life cannibal Shia LaBeouf.
Him. He's a cannibal?
No, he's not.
You haven't seen that video?
I
real
no.
life
ca-
with
oh
the
my
video
god
where he murdered someone.
No. There's a like a oh my god. Okay, so after after this podcast, I need to show you real life cannibal Shia LaBeouf. It's the greatest thing on the planet. It's from like 4 years ago. It's great. But let's go back to Goodfellas. Where were we before we went talking about Shia LaBeouf and rape? And
we were talking about theme. And,
oh, yeah, that's right.
I actually had something to mention with theme. One thing that I disagreed with you with in favor of the movie is you said it may not be his best movie, one of his best movies filmmaking-wise, but I think filmmaking, it's like super strong.
No, I'm not saying it's not strong, but I mean, Taxi Driver or Raging Bull, I think that you have more like that. If you're going to show, you would show Goodfellas in film school, but I think like when you're talking about like, I don't know. I feel like Raging Bull or Taxi Driver is a better like
where it's you know
film,
style defining.
Like, yeah, yeah. Where it's like the craftsmanship of film. But when I think of like the better movie, I think of Goodfellas.
Okay,
I really like Taxi Driver.
Yeah, Taxi Driver is also one of my favorite movies.
I haven't seen Taxi Driver.
Taxi Driver is like one of the definitive character studies of.
I've been meaning to see it. That's funny that he did two of the definitive character studies, as they call them.
What?
Raging Bull and Taxi Driver?
Both with Robert De Niro.
I
given like his two greatest performances of all time.
Yeah, Robert De Niro's in like every Scorsese movie.
Up until
so
like,
is Leonardo DiCaprio.
Up until 97 where he got Leo from Titanic.
Yeah, yeah, they switched. Wait. Scorsese did Titanic?
No, James Cameron did Titanic. I was just making a joke.
Okay.
No, I'm pretty sure his first movie with Scorsese was The Aviator, if I'm not wrong.
That sounds about right.
Pretty sure it's The Aviator. Which is
because he was really young in that movie.
Yeah, which is also a good movie.
Who directed Gilbert Grape?
Some...
I don't know.
Weirdo? I don't know.
Yeah, I'd probably know the name if they said the name and said he directed Gilbert Grape, but otherwise I'm not going to be able to tell you.
There was something I was going to say. I don't know what I was going to say. Move on.
Great.
Cool.
But I thought one of my favorite parts of the movies, I had a little note card I was taking notes on while I was watching
it. So professional.
Nerd.
Well, I just noticed a couple things, and I had the note card in front of me, and I was like, oh, I should probably write these down. But then I forgot to bring the note card with me, so I don't have it. I'm just thinking of these off the top of my head. But one of my favorite parts of the movie was the humor.
Yeah.
Specifically, the visual gags of where some mob thing, some crime is happening in the background, and then there's this domestic action occurring at the same time. So, for example, when they're choking Maury with a telephone cord, and then they get a call, and it's Henry's wife, and he's like, oh, what is it, honey? While on the other end of the telephone cord, they're choking Maury with it because he owes the mob money. That's like a hilarious visual.
Yeah,
it's so funny.
Yeah, Maury's wigs don't come off in the rain.
Yeah, and then as soon as they choke him with the telephone cord, his wig falls off. It's so funny.
Yeah.
I mean, he kind of tugged on his wig and ripped it off.
We're not talking about the wig. The wig's just like a side note.
Well, I
just brought up the commercial because I love that commercial so much.
He jumps into the pool not once,
twice.
Not twice. I think it's three times.
Was three times.
So, did you guys laugh out loud at any point during the movie?
I still laugh when I watch this movie.
Yeah, I didn't laugh at any part.
Interesting.
Well, I went, oh, fuck, at a few points. Like, especially, I don't know.
It's spoiler-filled, so say whatever you want.
Yeah, this caution is... Caution of the wind.
Yeah.
You can spoil it.
I loved Tommy getting killed.
Tommy
I was
getting
like,
shot in the face.
Shoot that motherfucker. I was so glad.
I want to touch...
Joe Pesci is incredible.
Joe Pesci is just phenomenal in this movie.
Like, he's hilarious.
He plays one of the most sadistic motherfuckers on film,
and it's
yet
hilarious.
He's hysterical.
Yes, my favorite scene isn't the bar scene.
Yeah.
With my favorite scene is when he's
Billy
like,
Bats.
What, am I funny?
Yeah.
What, you think I'm funny? And you're a funny guy. You know,
well, I thought you were talking about that's not your favorite scene, and you were going to talk about the Billy Bat scene where he's like talking about his shine box and stuff.
No, I'm talking about Funny How.
No, that's like that's like the definitive.
Scene was the shine box when he kills him.
Take it back. I did laugh at one point. It was the part where he was
go get your fucking shine box.
No.
I still laugh at that line.
I can't remember if I think I either laughed or gasped at that. I was like, it like affected me some way. But the part that I laughed at was his actual story when he was he told the cop to like go fuck his mother. And then
I
told you to go fuck
that
your mother.
I also love when Tommy's talking about how he wants to bang this Jewish girl, and he starts like, and they're like talking, waiting for the restaurant to catch on fire, and
like,
he's just
fuck Tommy with your fucking mouth.
Yeah, he's like, and you just have him almost like going Leo Getz from like Lethal Weapon 2. He's just talking really, really fast, and I don't know.
This is the first Joe Pesci. How do you say it?
Pesci.
Pesci. This is the first Joe Pesci movie I've seen since Home Alone 2.
Are the Home Alone movies the only other movies you've seen him in?
Yes.
He's really good in some of my favorite movies,
by the way. I actually like Home Alone 2 more.
I hope we don't have to watch that one day.
Maybe around Christmas time. But
I love those movies.
I just don't need to watch.
But he's also really good. Like, if I had to pick a role that my favorite Joe Pesci role that's not Tommy, because Tommy is like by far his best role, it's definitely Leo Getz from Lethal Weapon. So take like Tommy, like, give Tommy like no balls and make him like this guy who doesn't want any violence or anything, and he's accountant. That's Joe Pesci in Lethal Weapon 2, 3, and 4.
That's funny. Oh, we were actually talking about this the other day, but about Home Alone 2, Billy and I said that the main role we remember Tim Curry from rather than Rocky Horror Picture Show is
or
Home
Pennywise.
Alone 2.
Yeah.
Yeah, or Pennywise. Yeah, he's like what other shit has he been in?
He's been in other crap. I don't have an IMDb in front of me.
There was a big one that he was in.
All that really matters is that he played the hotel guy in Home Alone 2.
He would have been a good Grinch. They should have cast him instead of Jim Carrey.
Absolutely not. But we're not talking about the Grinch.
We're not even talking about Tim Curry.
Welcome to the Grinch podcast.
All right, scrap Shia LaBeouf. This is the Grinch cast.
Listening to this podcast will make your heart grow three sizes bigger.
So what do you guys think they could have done with his nose makeup?
Anyway, okay. My favorite part of Goodfellas by far is the beginning when he's with Henry as a kid.
Yeah, I thought you were talking about the beginning. I also love how they kind of drop you into the middle of the movie and right then you're just hooked and this movie just starts and doesn't stop.
I also like that. I also appreciate it that there's never, like, something is always happening. Yeah. Something's always in the works. It's
like
always
it's a 2 hour and 20 minute movie, and it just flies by.
Yeah. Okay, but, you know, all positives aside, like, it's a really good movie. Filmmaking-wise, it's super entertaining. I have no issues with it. I just ask, like...
Is it the hype surrounding it, or...
Yeah, like, okay. People list it as one of their favorite movies of all time, and I just don't get it.
I saw this before I started, like, looking at lists or anything online. It was just a movie that my parents said, hey, you should watch this. This is really good. I was like, oh, okay. And this was, like, my first real mob movie that I saw. So, like, I'm pretty sure I wouldn't like it as much if I had the hype around it, so I guess I got lucky in that kind of sense. But, like, because I literally had no hype when I saw this when I was, like, in eighth grade. I had nothing. I just heard it was a good movie, and I just watched it.
This is also my first mob movie, other than...
You've seen The Departed, right?
Oh,
that's
another incredible
Scorsese
Scorsese. Does Ratatouille have any mob elements? I think it did.
What?
I think the rats were, like, mobsters.
No.
They were like, you're a rat.
I want to see that movie.
They act like they're Italian, but I don't think they're necessarily
they're
mob.
French.
They're just Italian.
What?
You got to ice them. You got to ice them,
But now that you say that, I really want to see Ratatouille
as
a mob movie.
They're not French. They're in France. He's a French chef, but
the dad kind of reminds me of, like, an Italian, I guess.
There's also Zootopia.
Yeah, yeah with the, yeah.
Oh, yeah, with the Godfather, yeah.
Which I haven't seen. I have not seen The Godfather.
Now that's an example. I saw The Godfather with all the hype and stuff, and then I saw it, and I was like, it's fine.
Interesting. You didn't like The Godfather that much.
I was expecting, like, the greatest movie of all time.
Yeah,
you can't go into any movie
expecting
like,
the
greatest
I had,
movie of all
I
time.
I pretty much was like all the hype that you guys probably had with Goodfellas, I pretty much had with Godfather because I saw that for the first time maybe like 2 years ago or something, and I was like, and people were just saying, oh, it's one of the greatest movies of all time. And I'm like, oh, so this has to be good, and I saw it. And I'm like, yeah, the filmmaking's really good. It's just really slow, and I was so nonchalant after I saw it.
I couldn't believe that the one guy in Goodfellas is played by Samuel Jackson, the black guy.
Oh, Stax?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was funny. I knew that, but I wasn't even thinking about that when I watched the movie. And then afterwards, I was looking at the IMDb page, and I was like, oh, yeah, that was Samuel L. Jackson.
You never hear his distinct voice, and you never see his face.
Because
really.
he wasn't Samuel L. Jackson. Really.
He wasn't saying motherfucker at all during this movie. So
yeah,
that's,
he was
that's
just
why.
An actor at the time. He wasn't like
Okay, I love seeing actors when, before they made it big. And my favorite time, one of my favorite times involves Sam Jackson in Coming to America, where he plays a robber at the McDougal's or whatever the fake McDonald's is. We got to watch that. That's a really good one.
I haven't heard of that.
It's my favorite Eddie Murphy movie.
I thought that was a terrible Eddie Murphy movie. I thought it got really bad reviews.
I love that movie. That's one of my. That is my favorite Eddie Murphy.
What about
movie.
Meet Dave?
Say it was your favorite movie.
Yes, Coming to America is. I mean, it's one of my favorite comedies, at least. I if I did have to rank something, it would definitely be up there.
My favorite
movie
is Meet Dave.
Mine's Norbit.
Norbit. See, I had not heard of either of those movies.
Well, Norbit.
Well, they're both bad movies.
Coming to America is not a bad movie.
Well, we're talking about Norbit and Meet Dave.
Never mind. Because I'll defend Coming to America till my last breath.
Well, so Goodfellas, is that on the Is that on the
IMDb top 250?
No, the top 100.
Oh, it's got to be. If it's not, I'll be shocked.
What's that list?
It's top 100. The Citizen Kane's
AFI,
the number one
the
movie.
AFI top 100.
AFI top 100.
It's got to be on there.
I don't understand why.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense to me.
I just don't get it. Like, most of those movies, if they're on there and they kind of have a standardish plot, it's because they did something super innovative. And
I mean,
with that, it's like, okay, even when it's a fine movie, like regular okay, for example, The Grapes of Wrath is it's just an okay movie.
Yeah.
But when you place it in context, you realize that those handheld shots you have, for example, we talked about this in film studies, the shot of them going into the camp in California where it's almost like documentary-esque.
Yeah.
Like, that hadn't been done before.
Yeah, but I also kind of put into perspective, when you look at all the other mob movies, and you look at the influence of film, Goodfellas gives a lot of influence. This is the definitive mob movie. I mean, Godfather is known as, like, the greatest mob movie, but it's, like, romanticized mob. Like, this was the first time we really saw the mob, how it really was. It gave
form.
It its true form and its true representation. And I think the only other real format that, other than Scorsese, was probably The Sopranos that did that. And The Sopranos takes heavy influence from Goodfellas. I mean, that's why I think it should be on there, because it is the gold standard for these mob gangster movies, and it kind of set it raised the bar and it set the standard for what mob movies should be.
So maybe put it as the number one on the top 100 mob movies of all time, but top 100 films in general, yes, just for defining a small genre?
Crime drama is pretty big.
But crime drama doesn't include... That movie that didn't inspire crime.
Also, like, the use of editing and, like, the Steadicam shot, that was one of the first times we've seen something like that, the Wonner. I mean, everyone brings up the Wonner in the diner. That was also pretty revolutionary. I mean, yeah, we saw it in, like, The Shining and stuff, because that was the first use of the Steadicam.
The
Copacabana one.
Yeah, I remember watching that in film studies in high school.
Yeah, that's a good shot. I enjoy that. But
I mean, we kind of have to bring it up because, I mean, everyone brings
it
up.
But the Bye Bye Man did one shot.
Fuck the Bye Bye Man.
Really?
Fuck
the Bye Bye Man.
The Bye Bye Man didn't have a good...
The Bye Bye Man was one shot.
Fuck the Bye Bye Man. But if you saw the staging... If you saw
the
staging...
Was bad,
yeah, and you saw the...
And Squib was bad.
Fuck it. Fuck you. Fuck you. Fuck you. Don't compare the Bye Bye Man to Goodfellas. Fuck you.
The blood that explodes off a body when they get shot, that's a squib.
Isn't that slur there we were talking about the other day in Harry Potter?
Yeah, and then we also mentioned that a squib is a movie, a practical effect.
Oh, I guess I tuned that out.
Yeah, because, I mean, that's also what I like about Goodfellas. They actually use squibs and actual blood effects, because the thing I hate nowadays, I hate CG blood.
When they shot Stax, just that, like, that spray of blood all over the bed, I was like,
yeah, it makes you actually feel impact. But when it's CGI blood, it feels cartoony. But when you have squibs and stuff, it just adds to the realism, and then just adds to the kind of impact of the deaths.
And it was very realistic, and it's a great movie. Like, there's no doubt in my mind.
It's all time.
No, it's not. That's where I take issue. Is it's a great movie. Sure, one of the greatest movies of all time. I just, that's where you lose me a little.
I didn't even think it was a great movie. I thought it was a pretty good movie, but not a great movie.
Really?
Yeah. I give it a 7 out
of
10.
The final 7 out of 10? Okay.
Yeah.
The final...
It's a 10 out of 10 movie. It's just so good.
Okay, the final... by far my favorite shot of the movie, yes, is when he goes out, he gets his paper, cut to Tommy in the classic gangster. Yes,
yeah,
exactly.
Great, homage to the Great Train
amazing.
Robbery. Yeah, it's
so good.
And then you have the Sex Pistols versions of Frank Sinatra's My Way playing.
Yes,
it's
better
one of the
than
best.
That.
I love that. It's so good.
It's a perfect ending. Just pitch perfect ending.
Yeah.
You didn't think that ending was, like, just like that, so satisfying.
Like that is the like the encapsulation of the movie.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's
so good.
It just perfectly captures exactly how he feels.
Yeah.
And that homage really gives it context.
The buildup of the music and then Tommy's shooting just gives you this one last adrenaline hit before you can like the movie ends.
That and you just totally understand the way Henry feels.
Yeah.
So
people give Joe Pesci a lot of credit, but Ray Liotta in this movie.
Can I just say every time he was laughing, I was really annoyed.
I mean,
his mouth gets shaped like a bean, and it's like really gross. I hated it. Like he was like, and then he got this underbite. You know what I'm talking
his
about?
His laugh
is especially apparent in Funny How.
His laugh is really disgusting, but I mean,
knocks it down at least a star for me.
It knocks down at least 3 stars for me. I don't like the way you laugh funny.
Wait,
Ray Liotta, total miscast. His mouth is just really bad.
I don't like your bean mouth.
He was really good.
He's
liked
a total
him.
Bean mouth.
But yeah, I mean, you kind of need that strong anchor so Joe Pesci can like really shine in this movie, and so can Robert De Niro. Robert De Niro, while he doesn't really give a showy performance, he gives a very strong supportive performance. So these other two actors can really stand out.
I thought Joe Pesci was fine. I think you guys are kind of boosting him up a little bit here.
Why? What about his performance? Were there any negatives?
I guess
to his
it was mainly the fact that I just hated his character so much. But like,
there you go. Being able to separate your own opinion from the.
I don't like this movie because Sam Jackson died in it.
One star. I think that Heath Ledger. I think the Joker. He's just like a mean guy.
Yeah. Why does he like?
Ledger's bad.
He causes chaos. But I don't get why. Like, it's so mean.
He's a pure manifestation of hatred.
No. All right. So I guess it was partially because he reminded me of his character, Harry, in Home Alone. And so it was just kind of like he was just like
this. Which came out before Home Alone.
Comedic character. Like, I didn't really take him seriously. And it was just like, so basically I was looking at him for comedy because I was thinking of Home Alone the whole time. And then I was like, this guy isn't funny. He's a little cunt.
Yes, he is.
I don't understand where you're coming from. I don't get it.
You're a madman.
I disagree.
Man. Yeah, I do too.
And so,
well, you guys are idiots.
You have to. I mean,
not really. Not when, when, go, not when,
when
you, we can separate the actor
thing is,
from
when you go into
which
a movie,
is what you should do for
when you go into a movie with preconceived notions, and those preconceived notions mislead you. It's no one's fault but your own. You're the one who came in with those preconceived notions. So just because you came in expecting Joe Pesci to be a silly character like he was in Home Alone doesn't mean that because he wasn't.
Where's Macaulay Culkin? I'm still waiting for this Home Alone movie to start.
Where the fuck is Marv?
This is a terrible Christmas movie. There's only one scene that's at Christmas.
I see snow on the ground.
No, these are fair criticisms of my opinion, but I hold my opinion strongly nonetheless.
It's a dumb opinion.
Okay. Another thing I loved, on top of those. They're bringing the theme that clash between criminality and domesticity.
Mm-hmm.
When that was brought to the forefront in the visual gags, like I discussed earlier,
yeah.
I just loved that sort of clash they created where whenever he tries to blend the two, things get screwed up. And then when he goes to one, he can't focus on the other. And then he's finally forced to choose. He's forced to either go to jail for his crimes or he can go into witness protection, and he gives everyone up. He basically leaves the mob by breaking the one rule, which is don't be a rat, don't tell anyone.
Never rat on your friends, and always...
It was never talk and never rat on
your
friends.
Yeah, don't
like
say
that.
Shit and don't get caught.
Yeah, pretty much.
Or something
like
that.
That.
Don't rat and don't say shit. They're basically the same thing.
Yeah, it was the same rule said twice, just to show that that's an important
rule. It was always like never rat on your friends and always keep your mouth shut. Or something.
Wasn't that Fight Club was like never don't talk about Fight Club and don't break the first rule.
First rule Fight Club, don't talk about Fight Club. Second rule of Fight Club. So I don't know, whatever. I haven't seen that movie.
Help at all.
No, I'm just gonna go jump off a bridge now. Just fuck my life.
Okay. But so that clash was really interesting to me. And then as soon, he's forced into it and then he's unsatisfied.
Yeah.
It's almost like he hated the turmoil, but he fed off the turmoil. And and Karen was the same way.
Mm-hmm.
Where Karen, she got off on his kind of his darkness, his
yeah,
being
and
a
they
shitty intru- husband.
And they introduce her as like this innocent person. And when once he hands her the gun, that clicks, yes. And then that whole character just does a 180 by the end of the movie.
He says most women would have left their husband as soon as he handed them a bloody gun, but it turned me on, is what she said. Yeah. And then there's another visual gag, just like that, where when she wakes up Henry holding a gun to his face, mm-hmm. but when they pull out and you see, you know, they're in kind of a sexual position. He's on top of her, or she's on top of him. And that kind of shows, you know, maybe this isn't all a negative. It's sort of their dynamic.
I guess that's kind of a cool observation.
I just really liked the use of staging was really good. They had a lot of good visual gags that helped not only made the movie entertaining. Mm-hmm. Like those literally got me every time. Like those were so funny. Especially the best one is when they're at I can't remember Martin Scorsese's mom's house.
Yeah, yeah, Tommy's mom's house. And the picture.
That was hilarious.
And he's like, holy shit, without the beard.
Yeah,
love how Robert De Niro delivers the line all nonchalant.
Yeah,
looks like someone we know, and he's almost like looking at them for like, get it?
They pan, they zoom into that. And my favorite line, the line that made me laugh out loud in that scene is, I like it, you know, one dog goes one way, the other dog goes another. Like, that's your criticism of the art? That's why you like it? Because the dogs are facing different directions?
Another way, like, Robert
De Niro... I need to borrow this knife, Ma. I'm going to bring it back. I'm going to bring it back, Ma.
Oh, I didn't even pay attention to that.
I love how he says, like, Ma, it's a sin. I got to do it.
Oh, the...
I also love Robert De Niro with the Billy Bats scene where, like, where Billy Bats is like keeps on saying how he didn't offend him, and like Robert De Niro's like, you offend him a little bit, and he's like, no, I didn't. He's like, okay, so you kind of like know like, oh shit, you're like, something's gonna happen right when he's like, okay, you're gonna die tonight, okay,
yeah.
I just love that. I didn't know that until after I saw it maybe the fourth time or something. I caught that and I was like, that's just that little thing where it's almost like a mumble.
Yeah, the performances are detailed. They have a really really the. Part of that's the way it's written. The way it's written is very natural.
And this is one of the few films that Scorsese also wrote, because he doesn't really write most of his films, but this is one of, he wrote this with the author of the book Wise Guys, which this is based upon.
The thing, I think it was just called Wise Guy.
Yeah, no, it was either Wise Guy or Wise Guys or something.
And by the
way,
Goodfellas is a perfect title.
Yeah, I love. Yeah.
At the end,
it was a good title.
At the end, I realized I was like, because one of the major, they never call themselves criminals.
No.
Sure, a couple times, very rarely do they mention that they murder people. But when they do, they're very apologetic. They're like, it had to be done. There's no avoiding this. And it's very avoidable. But they're just constantly enabling themselves, constantly trying to
also
explain themselves and make themselves feel better about their... And some of them are just straight up psychopaths.
Yeah, but. I also like Tommy, but I love how like sometimes they'll cut away to violence, almost like when Paulie like makes shit. I'm forgetting the main character's name. I'm forgetting a bunch of things.
Oh,
Henry. Yeah, Henry Hill.
Beanmouth.
Beanmouth McGee. So when Beanmouth goes to Florida, where he just sends him to Florida, and then you just do a hard cut to him just bashing this guy's head in the car, and then they throw him over to the lion's pit. Just and like then, I love those hard cuts.
Yeah, and then there's no transition between them being in Florida and them getting busted.
Yeah.
They just quickly say, turns out he had a sister who worked with the FBI, and she tipped him off, and now we're arrested.
Yeah, and no one like another director.
You should like that. There's no in between. It's constantly moving to the next project.
Yeah,
knowing
if like another director got his hands on this project, you'd probably also like you'd have the Wise Guy storyline. You'll have the Goodfellas storyline, and then you'll also have like the storyline of the people trying to catch Henry Hill and stuff. So you'd cut away to them finding out about like the Florida stuff happening and the Los Angeles heist and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I like that it was all from one side of the story.
And they make him, like, you can't, like, I just love how they made Henry the main character. Like, he's, and it's almost like a slow transition in the mob. Like, he loves the life, but, and I also watched interviews with the real Henry Hill, and you realized the real Henry Hill didn't want to be, like, he wanted to be in them, like, get into the life. And then when they started killing people, he actually tried to get out of it.
Yeah,
on multiple,
and you see that. You see he does take issue with that. You see that he has issues
with the mob, but he's just in too deep where he can't do anything. Otherwise, he'd get killed.
Yeah.
So it just makes a very interesting protagonist where he isn't really even the protagonist.
The thing I like, you guys mentioned earlier, they had like detailed acting, and I really liked the one scene where they're at, they're thinking about killing the wig guy. What was his name?
Maury.
They were thinking about killing Maury, and then like there's a shot of them, like, you know, there's a scene where they're all like laughing and having a good time, and there's like this long shot of Ray Liotta or
Henry.
Yeah, Henry and Jimmy together, yeah. And they're like, Jimmy's like laughing, and they're both laughing, and like it just seems like it's gonna cut away, but then that's actually like a line, like he delivers a line, and it's like, wow, there was like a lot of like laughing and stuff before the line, so this is like, I don't know, it just felt really natural.
Yeah.
I also like how they made these people like real people. They're not like stereotypes. They actually are real people in this, because Tommy could just be an over the top just like villain, but they kind of made him into a real person. Yeah, he's a bit over the top at some points, but he's still a real character.
He's over the top, but so is the real Tommy.
Yeah, exactly.
Most likely. And my second favorite scene with Tommy is when he shoots Spider.
Yeah,
like that one. I was like, that's the scene where I was like, ooh, like I can't believe he just did that. Like first he shoots him in the foot, and then I laughed super hard when
He says, go fuck yourself, Tommy.
Yeah, he says, he shoots him in the foot. He says, go fuck yourself. Like,
and I love Tommy's reaction where you could just see he's just sitting there. Just,
yeah.
Because
he's got like such a, you know, he's short.
Yeah.
He's got a high voice. He's not very manly. And so you can tell he's kind of got a complex.
Yeah, he's got a Napoleon complex.
Yeah. He's constantly trying to prove himself.
I started to like Jimmy a lot after Spider told him to go fuck himself, because like Jimmy was like, oh, good for you. Like, I like how supportive he was and how he didn't get mad about that.
And then he shoots him, and they don't treat that like a big deal. They're like, why'd you do that?
Yeah, and then Tommy's
well,
like,
I mean, Jimmy
thanks
got,
for ruining the card game.
I was
Jimmy got kind of mad.
Tommy's
though.
Just like, I'll dig the fucking hole. I don't care. Yeah. I killed him. I'll dig the fucking hole. I don't care. Yeah. I also like, toward the end of the movie, probably one of my favorite sequences, if not my favorite sequence in the whole movie, where it's like a day in the life, where he's like, he has to deliver the silencers to Jimmy, Jimmy, and Jimmy doesn't want them, so then he goes to the hospital to pick up his brother, and yada yada yada.
Whole time he's high on cocaine. Yeah. He's high on cocaine, and he thinks cocaine's a hell of a drug. The cops are off him.
Yeah. I love how Jimmy's just in his like bathrobe, and then he starts yelling at Henry, he's like, stop it with the drugs, they're making your mind into mush, and he just slams the door in his face. I just love that.
Yeah.
And also the editing in this, like, just the Scorsese editing is clearly shown in that sequence. And yeah, I think that's the most masterfully directed sequence in the entire film.
It's hard to edit that quickly and have it not be jumbled and kind of like stumbling
all
like
over
it staggers
place.
Along. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's still really smooth, even though you're constantly cutting. And I was gonna say something.
It's almost like a music video at some points, because he uses like three different songs throughout that sequence.
I remember.
Yeah, you're talking about the ending sequence.
I'm talking about you know where it's like a day in the life, and it's pretty much he's on cocaine the whole day, and he has to go deliver the silencers to Tommy.
And he's sweaty and he's really gross.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
And then he goes.
Wait,
to the
I thought you were
to
talking about
his brother.
No, that was Jimmy, not Tommy.
Shit, Jimmy. Tommy.
You said Jimmy.
I'm pretty sure he said Tommy.
Yeah, he said Tommy.
To change the first letter and the second letter and same thing.
Okay, well, if I could say one flaw that I had with the movie.
Yeah.
I know I said I didn't have any flaws, but I'm thinking of one right now. I didn't like that Karen got her own voiceover.
Oh, what? I
like
that.
I think the movie would have been stronger if it was completely one-sided.
Yeah.
Because that creates more interest for the audience, where it's like, he's only telling his side of the story. How did Karen feel? And
I
kind of felt like okay, they had to, that yeah. he felt like he had to put that in.
I completely get it, and I kind of agree with you, but I like seeing the insight, because yeah. Karen doesn't really, I mean, she has stuff to do in the movie, but she doesn't have a whole lot, but the voiceovers that Scorsese gives the character yeah. kind of gives a little more insight to the character, so that just makes her a better character overall. Yeah. So I think, while I think it would have made more sense for her to not have a voiceover, it still added to the character, so I was fine.
It's not a choice it's not a choice that doesn't work.
Yeah. I really like that.
It's just I could see it working like a little better yeah. if it didn't happen.
Because I really like that, because that was like the one thing for me that distinguished it from Wolf of Wall Street.
So what like, the different voiceovers?
Yeah, different perspectives. I appreciated that.
Yeah, but I wish there was a different reason other than you just wanted it to be different than Wolf of Wall Street.
All right. I think we should wrap this up. What do you think? We want to keep it under an hour, so.
Okay, I've said pretty much all the things I want to say.
Yeah, I'm cool.
Right, so Billy, yes. You rate this movie 10 out of 10.
10 out of 10.
Solid. Okay.
No question.
I rate it 7 out of 10. 7.5, okay? Because I feel bad about my Home Alone analogy. So I'm going to give it 0.5.
And I give it an 8.9.
Yeah. So we all, I mean, I liked it more than you guys, but it's just, we can all agree it's a good movie.
It's hugely entertaining. I could see myself watching it at least once a year.
Not four times a year?
Absolutely not. No.
I'll probably never watch it again, but it was good.
I'll watch it in another couple months. I'll probably watch it next month for my birthday.
All right, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to the first episode of In the Picture. Just really quick, I want to plug my brother again. It's Bite Cops Music.
Gotta do that plug.
Bitecopsmusic.bandcamp.com. Gotta check it out. Great stuff. Thank you for tuning in, boys and ghouls.
We're gonna have James pick the movie.
Yeah, I'm gonna pick the movie next week, and we'll check out our Twitter for a little. We're gonna drop the bomb 2 days before each podcast of what the movie's gonna be. So, and that is In the Picture Pod.
On Twitter.
Yeah. And then if you want to email us a suggestion, or you can tweet us a suggestion for a movie, but our email is inthepicturepodcast@gmail.com. So
because we can't do In the Picture on Twitter because some asshole took it.
Yeah. Maybe we should change it to In the Picture Podcast.
That's too long. We tried.
Oh, fuck. All right. Whatever. Yeah. So check that shit out. I'm James.
I'm Drew.
I'm Bill.
See you next time.